Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Nathan Ramsey with Landisca Regional Council, and we appreciate you joining us for our weekly COVID-19 response calls. We started these calls, in late March, when the impacts from COVID-19 started in our region, and we continue those on. I hope it's been beneficial to you. And we're just trying to share information, best practices on how our community can better respond to the public health and economic challenges brought around by COVID-19. Just a few housekeeping matters before we get started. Everyone on this call should be muted. So, and we're doing that as a security precaution due to some earlier things that happened. So we're requiring everyone to be muted. And also that's why you have to register for the call. If you have any questions during the call, you can add those to the chat box. So you're joined from your computer, laptop, smartphone. There should be a chat function and you can add that. If you're dialing in to the number and are unable to do that, then you can text me at 828-768-3216. That's 828-768-3216. And I will try to share your question. Today, we're going to have another update from the governor's office. So we thank Drew Christie with Governor Cooper's office for doing that. And then we're scheduled, Chris Wall with EQV Strategic will be joining us, give us a federal state legislative update. Chris represents the North Carolina Association of Regional Councils of Government, the 16 councils of government in North Carolina. Landisca is one of those 16. And then, so if you recall, last week we heard an update from our four counties about the impact of COVID-19 on to them and what they were seeing. Well, today we're honored to have several of our region's municipalities join us and share how COVID-19 is impacting their cities and towns and how they are responding. So we're grateful for them joining us. We haven't got confirmation on next week's agenda, but I'm hoping to have bring back our K-12 schools, talk about school reopening in light of the governor's recent order, and also how they're going to handle all these different transitions. So I know they're incredibly busy at this time. So we'll go ahead and start our call with Drew Christie with Governor Cooper's office. Drew, thank you for joining us, and thank you for giving us an update from the governor's office.
Thank you, Nathan, and thank you, Landisca Regional Council, for hosting this meeting. As I say every week, and I truly do mean it, this has been a very valuable resource for myself, and I hope for everyone attending this call to hear what's going on all across the four-county region here. Before I start getting into numbers, I'll talk about the announcement that the governor made on Tuesday in regards to some PPE supplies that will be going out to some farm workers. And sorry, Nathan, unfortunately, your farm in Buncombe County did not fall into the county, I think it was 29 counties that were listed, but Henderson County will be one of those counties that will be receiving part of the 900,000 masks and other supplies to protect farm workers, and because agriculture is a vital part of our food supply chain, and these workers continue this critical work. The state is helping to protect them and their families from COVID-19. And so the Department of Health and Human Services is partnering with the NC Cooperative Extension, the North Carolina Department of Ag and Consumer Services, as well as the Department of Labor and the North Carolina Agro-Medicine Institute to expedite the delivery plan.
Drew, for those local farmers that may be interested in that, would the best route for them is just reach out to their local cooperative extension office?
Yes, it would. That they are going to be the intermediaries for farmers to reach out. So yes. So on another note here, North Carolina DHHS continues to add more free testing sites in underserved communities. It has approved a third vendor to provide testing in 23 zip codes as a part of DHHS's effort to increase access to no-cost COVID-19 testings for African-American, Latinx, Hispanic, and American Indian communities. You can find those at NCDHHS's COVID-19 website, and it's listed under the Community Testing Events page. One thing the governor mentioned, and there's and he wrote an op-ed recently, and it's out on Medium. But Governor Cooper is urging Congress to take action to extend the federal pandemic unemployment compensation program that offers an additional $600 a week to unemployed workers who have been out of work through no cost of their own, no fault of their own. That money runs out at the end of this week. And I do know that Congress is working on a bill right now. I don't know what stage they're at, but there's stuff being worked on. But as of right now, that $600 a week is scheduled to expire at the end of this week. We've seen the dire consequences of reopening too early in places around the country where hospitals are full and the virus is worse than it was in March and April. Many people cannot safely go back to their jobs, and many do not have jobs to return to. And while this virus continues to spread, we have to support these workers and their families. And so that's why North Carolina remains paused in our Safer at Home Phase 2. And that will run through, as of right now, August the 7th. That's Friday, August the 7th. And so, of course, we always encourage people to remember and practice the 3 W's, to wash your hands frequently, to wear face covering, and to wait 6 feet apart from each other. And now briefly, I'll turn over to the numbers here. As of this morning, I don't have the updated numbers that came out at 11 o'clock. These are the ones from yesterday and this morning. North Carolina has 106,893 confirmed cases, with unfortunately 1,726 deaths. Yesterday we had 1,892 new cases, and 8% new cases in congregate living facilities. We are still hovering right around the 9% positive rate. It's good that we're stabilized there, but that number is still a little too high. Secretary Cohen said we want that number to be about 4 to 5% positive of all the cases tested. So we've still got a ways to go to decrease the amount of positive cases coming in. Currently, there are 1,188 people hospitalized with COVID-19, 137 new admissions within the last 24 hours, and there are currently 360 people in ICU with COVID-19. And for statewide numbers on hospital bed use, that's 75% of all hospital beds are in use. And then the last numbers I'll give, and shifting off of COVID cases, move to unemployment claims. We have currently had 1,996,509 claims filed through July 22nd. with a total of $6,230,000,000 paid out. So we're making progress. There's still a lot of claims. I've gotten some emails from people that have not received unemployment insurance. So if y'all have any cases that come up with constituents that have not received their unemployment benefits, please email me and I'll try and help any way I can to get these claims answered. And with that, Nathan, that's all I have. I'll turn it back over to you.
Thank you so much, Drew, for that update. And we appreciate you joining us. And if anyone has any questions for Drew or the governor's office or any of the other presenters, again, please enter that into the chat feature. And if you're unable to do that, you can also text me at 828-768-3216. That's 828-768-3216. I'd now like to turn it over to Chris Wall with EQB Strategic. Chris represents the North Carolina Councils of Government, and we really appreciate him giving us an update from the federal and state legislative perspective. Drew spoke about some work that's happening at the federal level and Governor Cooper's advocacy. So, Chris, thank you for joining us, and let us know what's the latest you hear from D.C. and Raleigh.
Yeah, thank you, Nathan. And as Drew alluded to, there is a good bit of work going on right now in Washington, D.C. related to the COVID Part 4 package. It seems to be changing by the minute a little bit. So just to back up and give her a little refresher, I think the last time I was on this call, I had informed everybody that it looked like, you know, based on just timing and the negotiations and August recess, that it may not be until, you know, mid-September or early October before we saw a fourth COVID package come out of the of federal government. That timeline got moved up significantly starting last week. We got word from Senator McConnell's office that the plan was to introduce a bill this week, start negotiations between Senator McConnell, Senator Schumer, and Speaker Pelosi, so that the Senate could pass, you know, possibly by the end of this week, first of next week, the basically a bicameral package that then the House would then take up and have to the president, with the goal having it to the president by August 7th. That is still the goal. However, let me tell you what's transpired just in the last 2 days. So after McConnell put that out, he then turned to, and I think people have seen, the president has been insisting that a payroll tax cut be included in any COVID package that moves. The House Democrats, and I think for most part, Senate Democrats are opposed to a payroll tax cut at this point in time, but so are the Senate Republicans. And that the payroll tax has divided the Republican caucus in the House and the Senate. House Republicans have come out in support of the president. The president keeps insisting that the payroll tax be included, which has delayed some of the negotiations, right? And Drew had mentioned that the $600 bonus for unemployment insurance that the federal government had provided expires at the end of this week. That is also a main sticking point of contention. The Democrats would like to keep the $600 extension extended to for, you know, a specific period of time. The Republicans are pushing back on that. They are supportive of an additional bonus, for lack of a better term, for unemployment, but they want it to come down to around $200 to $250 a week. So the plan was today that McConnell was going to introduce what he describes as the Republican version, Senate Republican COVID Part 4 package, which is going to be around $1 billion. The good news is, for the folks on this call, is it does include funding for state and local government. That seems to be changing a little bit by the minute. I was actually just on a call at noon, and what we may see instead of actual text is we may just see an outline of priorities, but also heard that that may slip till tomorrow and potentially even the first of next week. And really what's happening here is you've got some, if you saw Senator Cruz from Texas, came out fairly significantly against additional spending from the federal government. Again, McConnell's is reported to be around $1 trillion. If you remember, the House passed HEROES Act was, what, 3.4, something like that, around $3.5 trillion. What we in the government affairs world have always assumed is they would meet somewhere in the middle and it'd be some, you know, along a $2 trillion package. I think that, you know, Senator Cruz and, you know, maybe a hand Senator Lee may make some noise as far as the spending is concerned, but I think ultimately a package passes this, but we're in the middle of the sausage making in the federal government, right? And we'll just have to stay tuned and see how that goes. The plan is still to get it to the president by August the 7th. It will be interesting to see if it does or does not include a payroll tax. And if it does include a payroll tax deduction, you know, what will the Democrats need in exchange? Liability protection is in, state and local. Unemployment insurance extension is in. I'm trying to think of the major parts. Obviously, medical supplies, PPE funds, so direct payments to farmers. Consumers will see another check issued to them. I'm told they'll have tighter income controls. Last time, I think, you know, you couldn't make more than $75,000 or $145,000 filing jointly. I think they're going to lower that threshold a little bit. There will be some money directly for the PPP program, I'm told, will receive another round of funding. So it will look a lot like what CARES did with some new spending. But just stay tuned. I'll keep Nathan posted. Happy to, you know, if anybody wants to reach out to me individually as we go into, you know, the rest of this week, which is now just, you know, tomorrow and the beginning of next week, we'll see. We'll know a little more, especially probably by the end of today, we'll get messages from McConnell on what he intends to do. But bottom line is that's the, everybody's just all eyes on Washington, D.C. right now. The General Assembly's not in. They come back in September 1st. So if everything goes according to plan, even if the federal government takes until mid-August to get a package to the president, when the General Assembly reconvenes on September 1st, they may have a new round of funding to appropriate leading up to the elections. And, you know, you always have to keep that in the back of your mind. Members are wanting to get out because essentially when they pass COVID Part 4, you won't see a lot more action coming out of the federal government. They're going to come in a couple of days in September, a couple of days in October, but for the most part, they will be out campaigning in their individual states and districts, which is, you know, they definitely want to get another round of funding so they can take victory laps off of that. Nathan, that's pretty much everything that's going on right now. Happy to answer, again, always, any questions that I talked about or anything that I haven't talked about.
Thank you, Chris, for that update. You did mention state and local government relief. Do you have any idea what ballpark that's going to come down to? I know, you know, at the state level, also the national level, the League of Municipalities, the county commissioners are advocating for that. And pretty much every state is facing a significant, you know, budget challenge. And, you know, the other part of that is the CARES Act funds that were approved earlier. There was some requests for flexibility on those funds. Do you have any more details, or I know it's a fluid process?
Yeah, Senator McConnell just has not released any details on his plan as of right now. But we're going to get to see it, right? There's been a few leaks. We were told that there's going to be $20 billion in direct payments to agriculture producers. But other than those top line numbers, we don't have anything. Unfortunately, I don't have numbers on state and local. But like I say, I mean, okay, so it's 119, 120, you know. Check in with me again at 2 o'clock, right? And I may have it, but as soon as I get it, I will send it to you. So then you can circulate to your group. The one thing I would always keep in mind is that what we see today is the Republican version, Senate Republican version, and the final package probably will look different. I would, I hazard to say that whatever, if what he includes is state and local, is similar to what was in HEROES, then you can pretty much expect that will be the number. But if it is significantly lower, than what the House passed HEROES Act, you know, I think it's always safe to say that that number most likely will creep up. So, you know, whatever you see today, no, that's probably the baseline or the lowest that you'll get. But hopefully there'll be more.
Do you have any guidance for our local elected officials at the city, town, county level on what they should do right now? I know a lot of them have reached out to their federal and state legislators, but any guidance, additional guidance there, Chris?
You know, I'm certainly not trying to be flippant, but unless you have Senator McConnell, Senator Schumer's, or Speaker Pelosi's cell phone, there's just not a lot that you can do right now, right? Even I talked to Senator Tillis's office this morning. They're still pretty much in the dark, which, you know, most rank and file senators are. This is a three horse race or three horse decision right now. And if you've got ties to one of those three, by all means, make the call. But I think outside of that, we've done about all we can do.
Well, we appreciate your update. And I know this is putting you on the spot and you may not have an update. I know on a previous call, we talked about the $125 million that the General Assembly included for small business relief, that for businesses that did not receive PPP or EIDL funds. I know Dan Gerlach was on one of our previous calls and gave us a little update that hadn't been released. Have you heard any update on that? You may not be following it. If you're not, not a problem.
No, I am. I'm following it very closely, actually. And I had emailed the Department of Commerce is currently working on that application. I think Dan said they were hoping to go live by August 1st. I had emailed the gentleman at the Department of Commerce. I think I emailed him yesterday or the day before, asking him just what the process was, and he did not respond to my email, and that he may not be allowed to respond to my email at this time, but other than I have asked, that's the only update I have.
Well, I think that's helpful, and we'll try to stay tuned to that, because that may be some resources that help many of our small businesses in our region that are struggling. We want to hear an update from our several of our municipalities that are joining us on today's call. So we really appreciate their time to do that. And I'm going to start with the city of Brevard, Councilmember Maureen Kuploff. And Councilmember Kuploff, thank you for joining us. And let us know how COVID-19 has impacted Brevard and what efforts y'all are making to respond to that.
Thank you, Nathan. Obviously, COVID hit Brevard just like everywhere else. You know, it had that immediate impact across all of our businesses, our nonprofits, all of our families, especially those, you know, with school children. And what we did as a municipality is we asked ourselves, what could we do as a small town that we could do quickly, that we could do safely, that would really try to benefit equally across the board all of our businesses. So one of the first things we did is we decided to create additional new public dining areas outside. So any place we had city-owned property, including we even closed one alley, we blocked it off, put lights across it. We moved picnic tables from all of our ball fields where, you know, those were closed. And so we created what we called like little public food courts, because all of our restaurants at the time, and they're still very heavily dependent on this, are focusing on the outside dining, on takeout. And a lot of our community, you know, we're an older community. We have a very high percentage of, you know, retirees here. They're very careful, and they're being very careful. They don't feel comfortable with in-house dining, even with the 50%, with the safe distances. They prefer the outside dining. And so we've created these public dining areas so that you can get something from any one of our restaurants and go over and enjoy that downtown. We also said, what could we do to get information out to our businesses? One of the things that we found was that there was so much information, it was changing so quickly, that we needed to make sure businesses understood the latest information, what they could do, and if they wanted to try something innovative, how exactly could they go out and try and make that happen. So we created what we call our COVID-19 Emergency Response Toolkit. This is actually online. It's on our website. If you go to cityofbrevard.com/the planning department, you'll see this toolkit. And what we consolidated everything together, all of our existing ordinances, all of regulations concerning things like outdoor alcohol sales, so that somebody, if they wanted to go ahead and say, we want to use our outdoor space, we want to use more of the sidewalk downtown. Can we do that? Do we need to get a special permit? What do we need to do to get approval at the state level for using serving alcohol out there? All of this is in our toolkit. It answers that question for them. And we put in place a fee-free, fast permit process. So if it is something that they need to get permitted by the city, we've got this expedited free process so they can come to us and we'll work it as quickly as possible. So what we've seen is an increase of our restaurants really putting tables out on the sidewalk, you know, in compliance, you know, with our ordinance and, you know, safety regulations, you know, on distancing for make sure we have that correct distancing for pedestrians, for handicapped access. We've also seen an increase of outdoor alcohol sales out on the sidewalk, again, complying with all the regulations that they have to have. And all of this being done, making sure that the safety and health and, of course, liability considerations are in place for the businesses. So to make sure the businesses knew how to use this, we organized joint sessions with our Main Street organization, Heart of Brevard, and had Zoom sessions teaching all of our businesses exactly what could you do under current ordinances and how can you get an exemption, you know, to more effectively use the outdoor space that is there to increase, you know, the possibility of sales of both retail and restaurants. We also went ahead and since curbside and takeout is still a very, very big part of the economy here. Our restaurants are really relying on that. We created 8 new curbside pickup zones in our little downtown. So any place you go in downtown, you've got these carefully, specially marked. We actually had permanent signs created for them, and we created the new curbside pickup. We also wanted to make sure that our visitors understood that the safety and health of our population was very important to us. And so we passed an ordinance in support, affirming the governor's resolution on mask wearing. And then we also wanted to make it very visible. And so we created a new city logo where you'll see the City of Brevard's logo is wearing a mask. And we put that everywhere. So the minute you enter the limits of the City of Brevard, you will see yard signs, you will see signs, and our city is wearing a mask, and we expect all of our visitors to be wearing a mask. So those were some of the things that we as a city did. We also were very supportive of, we were very lucky, our Chamber of Commerce, our Heart of Brevard, our Main Street organization, our Economic Alliance, they formed a grant fund, Transylvania Tomorrow. And the city has been the biggest contributor to that grant fund economically. We put whatever we could afford, we put in there to be given as grants to our small businesses. So those are some of the things that we've done. We also found that it was really important to make sure people had access to information. And I'm happy to say, again, our chamber, our Heart of Brevard, they really stepped up and they took the mandate to be sort of that one stop shop where even if you wanted to get information on nonprofits, on people that were not businesses, not in the city, not part of the chamber, we linked everything in really to their website so that anyone could go and they could find out information. We also created, working with our population, one of the things people kept saying was, what can we do to help? What can I as an individual do to help? And so we've created links where people who need help can match up with people who are offering help. So again, that was really just trying to, at a community level, sort of match the needs and with people that might be able to meet those needs. So that's just a real quick overview of what the City of Brevard's been doing during COVID.
Thank you, Councilmember Koploff, for that update from the City of Brevard. And I really appreciate your input and the things you're doing to try to support your community during this difficult time. Now I'd like to turn it over to Jonathan Goodnight. Jonathan's the town manager for the town of Biltmore Forest. Jonathan's going to give us an update on how COVID-19 has impacted their operations and their community.
Thanks, Nathan. And I would say, Maureen, that's a great overview for Brevard. Very impressive what you all are doing. We certainly don't have the amount of businesses or restaurants or anything like that, so ours is quite a bit different, I think, in terms of the things that we have going on. We still, just from an operational standpoint, we've continued operations as normal. Other than having the town hall itself physically closed to the public, we've been having people in sort of by appointments, things of that nature. So I think from our standpoint, it really has tried to keep things service-wise as best possible compared to where we were pre-COVID. So that's what we've been focused on and what we've been doing. We have actually improved some of our services because we've been able to fine-tune some things and find some efficiencies that maybe we weren't forced into thinking about until now. So that's been a good thing and a good challenge that we've had to really work with. But in terms of kind of the ongoing perspective, we're doing the most we can from a staffing level to ensure the health and safety of our people. Because we're such a small town, if we have, you know, unfortunately someone go down that has COVID or something like that, that has the potential to have a domino effect across our entire police department, our public works department, things of that nature, as it does with everybody. But, you know, when you're talking about 9 people in a public works department, that could get pretty dire pretty quickly. So we're doing, you know, everything we can to try to make sure that our staff is as equipped as they can be, is practicing the social distancing that they need to, both in public, but also in departmental wise. With themselves, and so we've given them all of that information and all the materials and PPE they need to do that. And so I think really just trying to push everything out and make sure that we're doing everything we can to be safe. I think from a plug, I'm not sure if anyone from the county is on, from Buncombe County, but we've worked really well with Buncombe County, the other municipalities in Buncombe County, with our interlocal agreement for the CRF funding reimbursements, which we haven't received yet, but we just put those in last week. But we are working well with them, and I think we're all on the same page. So that's been a really, really good partnership working with everybody there. So really from our standpoint, we're kind of in the wait and see pattern as everybody else in terms of the governor's different phases and where we go from here. We're continuing to keep the town hall closed. And that's likely to be at least until we do get out of phase 2, whenever that may be. Our meetings are being held remotely. We did have our first 2 Board of Adjustment meetings, which are quite a challenge via quasi-judicial procedure via Zoom. So if anyone hasn't undertaken that yet, just look forward to it. It's a blast. So we're doing the best we can, though, to get through everything.
Thank you, Jonathan, for that update for the town of Biltmore Forest. You know, a lot of the work for our municipalities, you can't necessarily do it remotely or from home. You know, if you think of law enforcement, public safety, public works, you know, and you mentioned some of the things you're doing to keep your staff safe. You know, has that been a I know that's an additional challenge for those workers, you know, because they can't do their jobs from home.
That's right. And, you know, it is difficult, I think, especially, you know, just the very logistically practical things you think about of 2 guys in the cab of a truck doing brush pickup, you know, and just things like that and making sure that there is separation where necessary or that they're wearing protective face coverings or whatever that may be. But you're right. It's difficult to do some things remotely. We've been in the office fully staffed the whole time. We've had 1 person who has worked remotely. And that's been successful for us. We've been able to do that. But all in all, it's you know, the service provision definitely hasn't stopped.
Thank you, Jonathan. Next, I'd like to turn it over to Mayor Barbara Volk. Mayor Volk is with the city of Hendersonville, and Mayor Volk is also serving as chair of the Land of Sky Regional Council. So, Mayor Volk, thank you for joining us, and please give us an update what's happening in the city of Hendersonville in response to COVID-19.
Okay, thank you, Nathan. We have obviously some of the same challenges and approaches that Biltmore Forest and Brevard have been using. We have worked very closely with the Henderson County emergency management people, the health department. We have done everything we can to share as much information as possible through links on our website, through Facebook postings, that sort of thing, trying to get out as much information as we possibly can. We did institute work from home as much as possible, or alternating days for our employees. We were able, if some of our employees did not have a private cell phone or good internet connection, we were able to provide them with a dedicated cell phone number or with a hotspot if necessary, so that they would be able to do their job from home, and that went surprisingly well. We were very pleased with how things went, and our employees did a great job of working from home. We have brought people back in for the most part, and we have reopened City Hall. We had closed it down mainly because there weren't many people there. But it is also by appointment only. We're just not opening the doors to any of the city facilities at this point for people to come in the way they used to. We had to obviously put in place new policies, kind of in a hurried fashion, including things like leave policies, disinfecting policies, disinfecting your workplaces, getting our cleaning company to do deep cleaning, policies on wearing masks, temperature checks when you come into work in the morning, all these different things that never thought we were going to have to do. We have also gone to online meetings, have had our city council meetings. We moved over to the operations center, which has a much larger meeting room than we have at City Hall. That's where all of our different committees have been meeting, those who were able to be there in person. Otherwise, we have Zoom, Facebook Live, all the different ways of people to be able to connect to our meetings. We have a couple of council members who so far have chosen to participate from home, but we've been able to accommodate them as well. It's kind of a mixed blessing. We like to be able to see one another, but we have also, through this process, realized that we probably are going to, from here on out, hold all of our council meetings at the Operations Center instead of at City Hall, just because of the larger space. We would be able to put in more permanent audiovisual equipment over there, rearrange some of the seating. I love our city council chambers, but it is a small area. So we may just end up using that for ceremonial functions, special meetings, but we'll be moving our regular meetings to the operations center. We're going to do some rearranging of the furniture, as I said, putting in permanent audiovisual equipment, so that people who now are tuning in online can continue to do that. That has one positive thing that has come out of this. We've been able to get more people involved and hearing what's going on at city council meetings than those who just come and show up. So that is one positive outcome that we were not really anticipating. Local businesses, as with every place, they are struggling. We do have visitors coming through town. obvious from license plates, from people walking down the street. Pretty much all the retail businesses downtown and around the community are open within their own guidelines, within the governor's guidelines. Restaurants, some are still just open for pickup, and others that have opened, again, within guidelines of limited seating indoors. And we, similar to Brevard, we have expanded what they are allowed to have outdoors to give them a little bit of extra space. We have canceled our Rhythm and Brews concerts. Travel and Tourism Group has canceled their street dances and other music on Main. Apple Festival, as we have known it the last several decades, have been canceled. No parade, no street fair, but we will be encouraging people to go out to the orchards over particularly that Labor Day weekend and get people out there. We'll still be able to purchase their apples and be able to see where they're actually grown for a change. We do have what we've tried is what's called the open streets, where a weekend or two a month we close down Main Street. We leave the cross avenues open, but Main Street is available for either the restaurants to expand, for the merchants to expand, so if people can walk down the street, much better opportunity for social distancing. It's had mixed results. Some of the merchants feel it's been an advantage. Others feel that they have fewer customers. We're still working on it, but we're going to be trying it for at least another few months and trying to improve on it every time, trying to get as many people down there as possible. We couldn't have done this without our staff. We have fantastic staff, employees with the city. As Jonathan mentioned, you've got those folks that couldn't work from home. They had to pick up the trash. They had to go out and dig ditches if there was a water line break. Everyone has continued on, and we have provided the service that people have expected from the city. And I'm very proud of all the work that they have done.
Thank you, Mayor Volk, for that update. And it seems like still a lot of things are happening in Hendersonville. I know some of those projects may have been in the pipeline prior to COVID-19, but it seems like you still have a good number of development activity in the city of Hendersonville. Is that the case, or is that just a misperception on my part?
We do have some proposals. We have proposals for a couple new hotels downtown. We'll see what happens with that. Our new police department headquarters, we have broken ground with that. Didn't have an official ceremony because we didn't want to draw too many people together, but the property has been cleared and we're underway with that. So there are still things happening. We've had several proposals for residential developments. Yes, things are still moving here, and we're very pleased with that.
Thank you so much, Mayor. I'd now like to turn it over to Daniel Cobb, town manager of Mills River. So we'll drive up Highway 191 a little bit and visit the neighboring municipality. Daniel, let us know what's happening in the town of Mills River and how y'all are responding to COVID-19 and how that's impacted the town.
Sure. Before I do that, first of all, thank you for having me. I want to explain why I seem so distracted. We installed a weather station on Town Hall a couple months ago, and in about the last 25 minutes, we've received over an inch of rain and had wind gusts of 44 miles an hour. So it got pretty interesting there for a few minutes. Temperature dropped about 20 degrees. Anyway, I digress because I'm a nerd. So things are good in Mills River. Much like Jonathan mentioned earlier, there's only so much we can do with a small staff. You know, there's seven of us here. We've had a couple guys in our parks, and then we've got one employee who's been working from home since March. And also, as Jonathan mentioned, we've been able to kind of realize some efficiencies in working remotely, and have really embraced being able to use Zoom for meetings. That's been a really nice tool. Operationally speaking, of course, the playground's still closed, as is our basketball court, but we have our restrooms open to the public, as well as the dog park, and then, of course, the walking trails. We are doing additional cleanings, disinfecting, actually, of our public restrooms about twice as much as we normally would do this time of year, which has helped help keep things clean, I like to hope. Within the building itself, we are all wearing masks when we are outside of our own offices. We eat lunch in our office. If we go out in the hallway, you know, going to the copy or whatever, we're all wearing masks. We're also doing self-screening. So each of us fill out a piece of paper every day that says, do you feel like you have symptoms? Do you have a fever? Those sorts of things, and just keep those in the file. As far as community support and what we're doing, we are doing our best to help keep the information up to date and accurate. For a long time, we were updating our website daily. We've reduced that to basically whenever we get more information from the EOC, from folks at Henderson County, and then trying to get more information out on Facebook, and putting signs up around Town Hall and within the park about social distancing, make sure people have masks on. Town Hall is open to the public. We've never actually closed the doors entirely. We have limited staff to interacting only through our lobby with any visitors, and there's plexiglass there to keep some distance between everybody. But aside from that, everything else has been done remotely, and it also has helped us transition a little bit more to a digital permitting platform. People are again getting very used to the Zoom type meetings, submitting paperwork electronically and getting approved, which has been a really nice step for us. Some things that we're working on doing potentially with the CRF funds from the county is replacing all of our plumbing fixtures in both the town hall and our public restrooms so that they're all touchless. Touchless sinks, toilets, the hand towel dispensers, things like that. And we're also exploring other options for sanitation stations within the park itself. We do have public restrooms, they are not incredibly conveniently located to some areas of the park. So we're thinking about doing some other sanitizing stations elsewhere within the park. So that's always nearby. Other than that, we've been trying to just kind of keep our heads above water. We're a small staff. Four of us are in the office at a given time. We were doing some remote working. One employee still is doing that, but we've all basically transitioned back into the office full time, but have capability to work remotely should that need arise. And we've transitioned to a hybrid of online meetings for public meetings. Our council has been, we modified our room a little bit so the council can sit 6 feet apart from one another. And then we broadcast over Zoom and stream on Facebook so that the public can watch the meeting even though they are not in the room. And so we have not done that with our Board of Adjustment yet. We have a meeting coming up in August, so I'm looking forward to working our way through that one. But the Planning Board's done it, and so far it's been very successful. We've gotten a lot of good feedback in doing that. And the biggest challenge that I'm facing right now, operationally speaking, is with our comprehensive plan. We can't get large groups of people together to do a normal public engagement that we would do. So I was invited to, and I'm sure some of the folks on this call were on the Asheville Airport Terminal input session a few weeks ago, and they had a platform. I don't know the name of it offhand, but it was a sorry, there's a lot of lightning. If I drop off, it's because the internet went away. It was a very engaging public tool that they used within the meeting, and so we're exploring that so that we can use it for public engagement in September. And so still give people an opportunity to give us their input, but not, yes, it was menti.com. So not that we are all in the same room together. So having to adapt a little bit, but we're making it work. And I'm encouraged by the way that everyone's been able to adopt to virtual meetings and being able to get work done and be efficient and provide service without interruption, really, since all this began. So All that being said, Amazon is going to be hiring soon. I just got an email about it yesterday. So I will pass that out to you folks, and hopefully we get some new jobs. Thank you for having me, Nathan.
And certainly encourage you to be safe. I know you're in the midst of a severe storm there. So our hearts go out to you. I hope everything's okay for
you
and the folks in the town of Mills River. And you are still seeing a good bit of development activity, even though we're in this challenging time. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. So development activity continues to be above where we were this time last year. We're about 20% above permitting over the same time last year. I just did the math yesterday for some census data. We had, throughout the calendar year 2019, 141 new homes built in Mills River or permitted. Some of them are still under construction. This year so far, there's about 30 that are under construction. So development is still good in Mills River. I don't know, maybe it's because it's summer, or maybe because people are stuck at home, but in-ground swimming pools are like the hot topic right now. I've been permitting those things left and right. And a lot of residential additions and remodels and decks and things like that. So right now we are above where we'd expect to be at this point in the year for permitting activity, mostly commercial. As of late, I received some larger commercial development plans. Those are in the very infant stages of design, but those should be permitted in the not too distant future. So we'll start seeing some more groundbreaking on that. So yes, things are still very much happening in Mills River. With the exception of some walk-in traffic slowing down in the month of April and into May a little bit, things haven't really slowed down that much in Mills River as far as permitting goes or development activity.
Thank you, Daniel, for that update. And share that information regarding those Amazon jobs. I think Jason Chappell, who's the Career Center Manager in Henderson and Transylvania County, was on the call. And we look forward to working with the town and our partners at Blue Ridge Community College and NC Works to support that project. And I think it's about 200 new jobs for our region. So. That's good news in a challenging time.
Yes, it is.
We have, some representatives from Morris Hill and the town of Black Mountain. I don't know if our past chair, Larry Harris, wants to share anything on behalf of the town of Black Mountain. And Chairman Harris, I hate to put you on the spot, but Larry previously was our board chair at Land of Sky, and he's on our executive board. Do you have an update for the town of Black Mountain, Larry?
Nathan, can you hear me?
We can. Thank you.
Great. Thank Larry. I had muted myself, and I'm always a little concerned that I make that conversion from mute to unmute accurately. But anyway, Nathan, we are very much in the same place as some of my colleagues have just described in Hendersonville and Brevard and also in Mills River. Our board meetings, we're conducting them in our boardroom and keeping the numbers of people in the boardroom at 10 or under, and which with five members of the board and the mayor and the town manager and the town clerk and someone to run the video equipment, that kind of caps us out. So we are running them by Zoom, and our town attorney's present as well physically. But we are running them by Zoom, and that's actually gone pretty well. We're learning how to do that, and with the town attorney's good guidance on keeping the following the statutes that the General Assembly put into place for us to hold these Zoom meetings while we're under emergency conditions. Things seem to be going pretty well, so we're conducting business, and on that ZBA meeting that Jonathan mentioned in Biltmore Forest, I'm not certain if we've held a ZBA meeting, but that does sound a little challenging from what I've heard of it, and we may have held one, and I haven't caught up with the town manager about how it all went, but we are contemplating. We're having folks that ask us to do just what the folks in Hendersonville and Brevard have done, and that's open up a street and or close off a street actually, and allow folks to enjoy the restaurants but dine outside. And we're working with our police and also our fire chief, police chief and fire chief, to see how that works for us. And basically, we would be supportive of that if public safety can support it. And of course, it's the merchants on the street that we have in mind closing off if they support it. And curious if there's been good positive reactions in both communities in Hendersonville and Brevard in that regard to closing the streets. I know I drove through Hendersonville one day when the streets were just getting ready to close. I think if I understood correctly, I believe it was a Sunday afternoon, and certainly you had a lot of people out enjoying dining outside. So we want to do whatever we can to support our merchants, and like everyone, it's been a difficult time for folks setting up with small businesses in our small towns. We continue to try our best to encourage all our citizens to wear their mask and to stay on top of that, and we've posted signs encouraging that the governor has mandated that, and we want to encourage everyone to do just that, because we certainly believe that will help us get over this thing sooner rather than later. And our golf course has been especially busy during the COVID period, and continues to do so. And with the pretty good summer weather we've had and spring weather, we're very pleased with the amount of play, and it's a great place for people to go and recreate in these times. And so we're plugging along. We're thankful that our community has risen to the occasion in many, many ways. And we're also, I believe it was Jonathan who mentioned the employees and their health. And we're a small town as well, and it would not take too many folks that needed to be out quarantining or getting sick to create some stress. And fortunately, we've been able to, I think, practice good safety methods, and I think everyone stayed healthy. So we are thankful and appreciate all the good work our town staff has done and our town manager, and I really appreciate hearing how everyone else in our region and the folks who share today. It sounds very similar. Everybody has found a good way to move forward, and it sounds like we're all moving forward and getting things done, and I think we'll continue to do so and learn how to do that in a safe manner. Appreciate you hosting the call, Nathan.
Thank you so much, Larry. We really appreciate it, and we appreciate your service as chair of our board, and now you're our past chair, and we're grateful for your leadership on behalf of Land of Sky and certainly the town of Black Mountain. I don't want to put him on the spot, but Nathan Bennett, town manager of Morris Hills, with us. And Nathan, if you have anything to share, we got a few moments left on the call. If not, that's okay. And again, I apologize for placing you on the spot.
Hey, that's no problem. I appreciate you asking. By being one of the last to speak, I guess I can say pretty much we've done all the things that we've heard from our colleagues around the region there. We've been fortunate in Madison County to not have had as many positive COVID cases, so we're grateful for that. Have not had really any impact here in the town. We did close town hall in the very beginning, just reopened that the 1st of July. We require masks and face coverings if you enter town hall. We've, of course, closed the playgrounds still. We did reopen our swimming pool, which has been a very popular place, and we do self-screenings when folks come to the pool. And very active. That's been a good thing here. Folks have been looking to get outside, and our greenway has been incredibly busy, and the other park facilities that are available. And like Daniel mentioned, we're certainly not getting the volume of permits and things here, but for us, we have really gotten a lot. Those continue. We've got development continuing here. Houses are coming in, and I've issued many zoning permits through this time, and so we're really just continuing to plug along. We did close a section of parking along our short downtown area there. There's three restaurants on the Main Street, very condensed area, and we closed the parking areas so they could use that for pickup and delivery and those kind of things. So we have tried to support all of our businesses in town to the fullest extent we can. I would mention we have met with the county folks and talked about the CARES funding that's available and how we are going to look to expend some of those resources in our response efforts as well and moving forward. So I'm very grateful for Madison County and to the state for making that resource available. And with that, that's pretty much what I have.
Nathan, thank you so much. I appreciate the update from the town of Mars Hill, and we appreciate your leadership and your town board for their work during these challenging times. It's great to hear from the municipalities who were able to join us. Certainly, if other municipalities in our region want to share on a future call, we'd more than welcome to have them on a call. So certainly reach out to me and we'll schedule that. Just a reminder, these calls, we try to record them and place them on our Land of Sky website at landofsky.org. And on our homepage, there's a COVID-19 section that you can go and find resources for these calls. Our next call will be next Thursday, which will be Thursday, July 30th. Hopefully we can possibly hear an update from our K-12 schools. We'll see what the schedule of our public schools are at that time, and if they're able to join us. But we hope everyone stays safe, stays well, and we appreciate you joining this call and hope you have a wonderful rest of your day. Again, thank you so much. If you ever want to reach out to me or if you have any questions, you can reach out to me at nathan@landofsky.org. And that contact information is available on our Land of Sky website. Again, thank you so much and have a wonderful day.